Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Once again to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my partner in crime, Mike McShane. Mike, how you doing, pal?
Well, yeah, it's a typical Friday morning, Friday afternoon, long night, post-production work on 5 minutes at the frat house. But I'm here. Beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Oh, it is a beautiful day out there today. Nice and sunny, no rain, no snow.
Getting a little warmer.
Best day we've had in a couple of weeks now, Mike.
It sure is. I'll tell you, it really felt like the other day, it felt to me like we had seen the sun like maybe twice in the past 2 weeks.
It's been out, you know, it's been trying to come through, but unfortunately the bad weather has been beating it back. So.
And we're supposed to get some warm weather. I mean, my gosh, it's supposed to go up, I think, into the mid-60s by the weekend.
Yeah, is it fall or what? I mean, seriously, November?
I'm not sure. 60s? Yeah, you tell me. I lose track of time as it is, so.
Well, hey, I still need to get my planner, so.
Yeah, you go get that paper planner.
Yeah, listen, paper planner, baby. We're getting it done here. But you know what? We're having a good day here at Fan Junkies Radio. Yep. You know who's not having a good day, Mike?
Who's that?
National Hockey League fans.
Yeah.
Actually, they haven't been having a good few months, but it's getting worse and worse.
Well, it's the yo-yo effect, isn't it?
It's been bad. It's been bad. You know, every time there looks like there's you know, that the sun is going to break through for the clouds here in the NHL, the clouds start to come back, and it just covers the sun up. So, you know, the glimmers of hope, you know, they keep fading out, and once again, they're fading out today. You know, Mike Halford over at Pro Hockey Talk at NBCSports.com has an exclusive story up, Mike, about Donald Fair's post-meeting memo to players. They actually obtained a copy of it, and it does not look good, Mike. You know, NHLPA boss Donald Fair is saying that there still is a lot of work to be done. No new proposals were exchanged on pension issues, but they will discuss this issue again tomorrow on Friday. So that makes them meeting, I believe, 5 days in a row now.
Yep.
You know, it's good that they're finally meeting every day in a row, but this is something that they should have been doing for months now, Mike, right?
Oh, absolutely. But and it's interesting because the story you've got there,
yeah,
which is coming from the NHLPA side, is actually confirmed this morning by Tim Panaccio over at Comcast Sportsnet Philly, where apparently, and you're reporting it from Donald Fair's side, Gary Bettman put out a memo to the Board of Governors late Wednesday night, indicating in there that the everybody should be prepared for a breakdown because the two sides are so far apart on the whole make whole of existing contracts. So it's confirmed. You know, we got both sides that are indicating it. You know, they've tried to keep a lock on the talks, a really solid lock on it, to the extent that, you know, they've been meeting in privacy. Nobody seems to know where they are. But and yet information keeps getting leaked out. Apparently yesterday's meeting, I believe, was at the former law firm of Gary Bettman up in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
So information keeps leaking out, and you know, as you pointed out, you know, 3-4 days in a row, suddenly a lot of us. Well, I'll speak for myself. Maybe,
yeah.
I was getting somewhat anticipatory that perhaps maybe they would get this thing done, and we could see a little bit of hockey action in the next couple of weeks. You know, you and I disagree on that one a little bit. But now, come Friday morning, suddenly, you know, as a hockey fan, I'm a little bit downtrodden, taking a look at and hearing some of these reports.
Yeah. You know, in Fair's letter to the players this morning, he writes, and I'm going to quote it, "In short, the concessions on future salary we have offered are not enough. We are still being told that more salaries must be conceded and that very valuable player contract and rights must be surrendered. So while we are still meeting again, and while some steps are being taken, there is still a lot of work to be done and bridges to be crossed before an agreement can be made." Now, just reading this memo from Donald Fair, they're not close, Mike.
Well, no, but, you know, let's get it straight. A lot of this was created, in my opinion, somewhat artificially by the owners.
Yes.
In signing these large long-term contracts. And I think a lot of them did that knowing that once they went into CBA negotiations, they were going to be able to probably get a lot of these, you know, reneged or at least shortened, because they would come in with new CBA that would have new language in it. And I think that, you know, a lot of these long-term contracts were signed almost fraudulently.
Yeah.
And that's where it's really coming down. We're not looking – this is not a situation where we're talking about your general run-of-the-mill contract, a two-year contract, a three-year contract for just your average player. What we're talking about here is we're talking about those larger star contracts, those big, enormous 10-year contracts that are sitting out there, a lot of which have just been signed recently.
Yeah.
And the question is whether the new CBA is going to grandfather those.
So
right now, the owners are saying, no, they don't want it to be. However, the owners have got to understand they're the ones that signed the damn contracts.
So, you know what? Let me ask you this, Mike. From what you're reading, from what we're both reading, where do you see this going right now, in your honest opinion?
I got to be honest, Jonathan. It's tough for me to tell because, I started out by saying it's a yo-yo effect. And truly, that's kind of the way I feel.
Yeah.
Last week, I would have said, this isn't looking good at all. I do not think we may have a hockey season at all, particularly as they canceled the Winter Classic. With some of the reports that we've had from Monday, Tuesday, earlier this week, I started to get somewhat more optimistic. Now, I'm back to where I was before. I don't know where, I think the NHLPA is going to hold the owners and the NHL's feet to the fire on these long contracts. I think the NHL is going to have to eat it.
Yeah.
If they don't, the other thing, here was the other thing in the report that I had, was that apparently in that same memo that Bettman sent out on Wednesday night, his goal was to potentially have a shortened season that could be started on Black Friday, which would be November 23rd, December 1, or January 1 at the very latest. If it goes past that, if there's no way of getting games started by January 1, in fact, it's indicated that the entire season would be gone.
Yeah.
Now, in order for a January 1 start date, let's be realistic. You'd have to back that up probably at least 4 to 5 weeks on the whole negotiation process, which takes you to about the third, maybe fourth week of November.
Yes.
So
we're right up on top of
exactly,
right now.
Exactly. We're
yes.
looking at about 2 weeks, 3 weeks before you're going
to. So you're looking at about maybe a good 8 to 10 days of negotiations would need to be done.
In order to save.
And positive negotiations.
Correct.
In order to have the season.
That's the way I would see it, and I think my timetable there is probably pretty darn close to being accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Now let me ask you this: there were rumors that they met for about 13 hours the other day. The next day, about another 10 or 11 hours. Yesterday, they only met for 5.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of people, myself included, saying that this should have been going on before the season even was supposed to start.
Sure.
They should have locked themselves in rooms and got this deal done. Now that they only met for 5 hours yesterday after meeting for so many hours days before, is that a good sign or is that a bad sign?
Here's my gut feeling on it, and I don't know – obviously, I don't know anything for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I have no insider.
Well, nobody really knows for sure.
Right. I have no insider.
It's all speculation at the moment.
My guess would be that they probably went and they tackled the profit-sharing – percentage issue first. That was probably some of those 13-hour meetings. My suspicion would be that they've probably come to an understanding and they probably come to a formula on how the profit-sharing percentages will work, whether it's a sliding scale over a number of years or what. I think that the five-hour meeting now, I think what we're talking about is we're talking about the contracts that are sitting out there, this whole issue of that Bettman refers to as the whole making whole issue. I think that's where we're now falling down.
Yeah. Well, we had some tweets from, at least some of my favorite hockey insiders in the game, Darren Drager and, Bob McKenzie. To me, there's nobody better than those two.
Right.
Over on TSN, they write, for any of this to happen, signs of progress need to emerge soon. Something neither side is entirely sure will happen. And then Darren Drager goes out and tweets, I understand negotiations, just don't see how the lockout ends anytime soon given the position of both sides.
Right.
This is coming from a guy who knows the game, who has been through a bunch of lockouts, who knows how negotiations work. He's not being he sees no signs of positivity coming from this.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Listen, let's get it. You know, let's go back to the genesis. All right, the initial issue was the NHLPA was talking about the whole profit sharing issue.
Yes.
The NHL said that the players had to come off of the 57-43 formula.
Yes.
57% favoring the players, 43 for the owners.
Yes.
All right. That I would suspect that the owners and Gary Bettman and the NHL have probably come off of that a bit. I think that that issue is closer to being resolved.
Yes.
So in light of the fact that the owners, I can just picture how this is going. The owners and Gary Bettman and folks are sitting there in that boardroom and they're saying, look, we've come down off of the profit sharing. Now you guys are going to have to come down off of the contract issue. And I have a funny feeling that that's where it's getting hung up. The owners are making the case, look, we've given in as much as we possibly can. Now it's time for you guys to do so as well. And I think that's where the whole issue is falling.
Yep, it is. Hockey fans, give us a call, 347-237-5373.
Absolutely.
Let your voice be heard. Let us know what you think about, you know, everything going on with the NHL lockout right now. You know,
sure.
We're all ears.
Absolutely, and I do want to hear from them because I think that anybody listening to this show right now can hear the passion in both of our voices when we talk about this subject. And we've been bringing it up now for weeks, Jonathan, and each time we do, we get more and more angry and disturbed by the whole thing. So I would love to hear from hockey fans out there, and I would love to hear them be as passionate and I suppose as perturbed as we are.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, you know what? When, like I said, you know, before we started talking about this, when there's a glimmer of hope and it looks damn good, and that's what it looked like when the owners came out offering the 50-50, Don LaFleur came out saying, well, it's good, but there's a lot of hitting agenda in it. And this and that, you know, we even had Dan Hynote on, the Columbus Blue Jackets assistant coach, and he even showed some signs of positivity towards it after everything we spoke about, because right after that deal was, you know, was put forward, you know, we had him on our show. So, you know, every time it looks good, you know, they take two steps forward, but then they take about eight steps back.
Right.
You know, and you know, there's been so many steps back now, you have to wonder if they're actually going to take all of those steps forward now to even get close to anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Donald Fair's note today to the players, he said that the owners asked the NHLPA and the players that they, you know, they told them, not even asked them, they told them they want an immediate reset to 50-50, which would significantly reduce the salary cap, and that their proposals to restrict crucial individual contract rights must be agreed to. So, you know, you know, what's going on? You know what I mean? Every time it looks like something positive is happening here with these CBA talks,
yeah,
all negative stuff comes out.
Well, one of the things that I brought up here at the frat house last night, and, you know, look, let's get it straight. You know, it's all in our recent memory now. I mean, we have just, as fans, we have just witnessed the NFL go through this last year. We just watched the NBA go through it last year as well, which shortened their season.
Yeah.
Would you please tell me why, in fact, and I do not remember the NFL or the NBA working in this manner.
Yeah.
The NHL makes a proposal. The NHL, Gary Bettman and the owners, they put forth a proposal. Players come back, they go, uh-uh, we don't like it. At that point, then the NHL and the owners go, okay, your turn. You submit something. Now, the players come back. They make a proposal. This going back and forth. Okay, it's not my ball. It's your ball. Oh, okay, now it's not my ball. It's your ball. I mean, who negotiates that way? I don't remember the NFL and the NBA operating that way. Oh. It was generally a situation where the NFL and Goodell were making the proposals, or it was the NBA and Stern making the proposals, and then they would negotiate from there. It wasn't this situation where, okay, we made a proposal. Oh, you don't like ours? All right, well, then go write your own.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know what? You have two big egos in Bettman and Fair colliding right now. One of them want to come out as the hero. They both can't. And that's what's going on here. Now, somebody wrote a comment earlier today on, you know, one of these hockey articles I was reading, and they were talking about their perspective on everything as a fan of Boston. You had Robert Kraft with the Patriots and then Jacobs with the Bruins. Robert Kraft was hailed and noted as one of the heroes of ending the NFL lockout.
That's right.
He wanted to get back to playing. Now you have Jacobs, who is one of the heads of the Board of Governors. He was at the forefront of all of the owners right before this lockout who threw out hefty contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Now he wants that money back.
Yep. That's exactly right.
You know, it's stupidity on behalf of the NHL, the NHL owners, the NHLPA, Don Lafleur, and even most of the players that are involved right now.
Well, yeah,
it's stupidity on both sides of the puck, Mike.
You make a valid point, and the word that I used last night here at the Frat House was, in talking about these large contracts where these owners signed them, knowing that they were going to be going into CBA and negotiations, it was almost a bit of collusion. From the standpoint that they're going, oh, yeah, go ahead. Listen, we're going to write this contract up. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. Knowing in the back of their own mind that, in fact, once they went into CBA negotiations, potentially they would be able to get language into the new CBA that would, in fact, either shorten or nullify, in some respect, some of those contracts. And that, I think, is collusion. And, in fact, really, in some respects, if the NHLPA wanted to be real bastards about it, if they wanted to, they could probably – take the NHL to court for unfair labor practices.
Who knows? I mean, that might even be on the agenda one day.
Yeah.
You know, but this is where we spoke about. Last night I had the pleasure of being on 5 Minutes at the Frat House to talk about this. And, you know, you agreed that you would like a shortened season because you think, some hockey is better than no hockey.
Yeah.
I am on the end of things where I agree that they should just cancel the season because I am tired of the work stoppages. I am tired of the crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just cancel the whole season out, focus on the issues at hand, get it done, and at that same time, let the devoted NHL fans who feel like they just, you know, had their souls ripped out by the NHL and stomped on, let them heal, let them miss the game of hockey again, because that's what's going to need to happen. That's what happened at the last lockout, Mike. You know, the fans missed the game of hockey, and then they said, well, you know what, we really miss it. Let's give it another chance. But unfortunately now, it's so fresh, that last lockout, that the fans who came back to it, they're really pissed off again. They might not come back at all now, shortened season and no season.
Well, see, and I understand your point, and I might agree.
And I understand your point as well.
But see, here's where I'm going to disagree with you. I don't feel that if it's at all possible to even get a shortened season in there, I think every effort should be made to try to do that. Because regardless, let's say they can work everything out in the next 2 weeks. To say, okay, look, you know something, we've gone too far as it is. We're just going to cancel the season anyhow.
Yeah.
We're going to let everybody have some time. We're going to let the fan base have some time to heal, quote-unquote heal. I don't think that that's a good healing process, Jonathan. I think a better healing process would be to come back, skate up, get the action going on the ice, and Brandon, our technical director here at the Frat House, made an excellent point after the show last night where he said, listen, it's two words. It's two words that will get the fans healed from this. Two words will do it. Playoff action. There is nothing like hockey playoffs. You and I both know that.
Oh, of course.
It's the greatest playoff season of all of the sports.
Yeah.
And everybody will forget about the lockout. Oh, yeah, maybe in the off season it'll all come back fresh to us. But at the moment, nobody will be thinking about the lockout in April and May when we're so used to seeing some of the greatest hockey being played. If we do not have playoff action in April and May, that is when you're really going to see, I think, some fans that are going to really, really be perturbed.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Because of the lockout, if they get a shortened season in, there's no time for camp. There's no time to get in shape. There's no time for preseason.
Right.
You know what that means as well as I do because we saw it with the NFL. We saw it with the NBA.
Right.
Key injuries.
Yes.
Now, teams that are supposed to compete and supposed to make the playoffs, New York Rangers, Los Angeles Kings, Detroit Red Wings. Now let me ask you this, Mike, as a fan to another. Using the Rangers as an example, Rick Nash gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
Henrik Lundqvist gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Richards gets injured. Those are three of the biggest players that the New York Rangers have, three players who are some of the best in the league, who are going to lead the Rangers into the playoffs, and they need to have them to compete. have to have them.
Okay.
Now, because of the lockout, if a team that's supposed to compete and supposed to be really, you know, really good, if they lose players due to the fact that they're not in shape, they didn't have time to get in shape, and whatnot, is that going to turn fans away from playoff hockey?
I don't want to sound callous about it. And yes, we saw it last year with the NFL. We saw it with the NBA. There were those out there that said
injuries.
Well, and there were those out there that said, look, some of these injuries may be caused as a result of the fact there just wasn't enough time to prepare. Hockey players, I think, are a little bit different. Jonathan, you and I both know many of the star players, particularly the star players, are playing right now. They're playing in other leagues. They're playing in the AHL. They're playing out in the KHL.
Really, honestly, if you look at the list, there's very, very few star players out there playing right now.
Oh.
Very few. There's a lot of role players playing, but there's very, very few star players playing.
Well, you know, I injuries are going to happen regardless. You know, it's a matter of the game. It's part of the game. It's part of every game. And you look, are fans going to be annoyed because they lose a star player for the playoffs in a shortened season? I think that if you ask most fans, they would rather have the playoffs even without their star player and just hope that their team can find a way to work around that, as opposed to not having any hockey at all on the possibility that their star player might get hurt.
Honestly, I've been hearing opinions from so many, you know, hockey fans, you know, due to Ranger Nation and so many things else. I hate to tell you this, Mike, but the consensus is going the other way. A lot of players, you know, a lot of people want the season to just be completely done with because so many other factors, and that's one of them.
Right.
So,
well,
I mean, everybody has their opinion on it. I agree. I would like to watch hockey, you know, but then there's so many other factors to a shortened season, you know. But like you said, hockey players are not like other players.
Right.
You know, it's a rough and tumble game. It's not basketball. It's not baseball. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, there's a lot of intangibles in the sport that other sports don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at it from that perspective as well.
Well, and you've got your fan base, which obviously you're listening to. And if your fan base over there is indicating to you that they would rather just see, you know, the entire season scrapped, that's fine. I actually posted up.
Many different things. Three stoppages in 18 years is one of them. You know, and like I said, last lockout from the early 2000s, it's still very fresh in people's head. They're still coming back from it. You know,
yeah. And I posted up a poll though, following our conversation about this on Wednesday. I posted up a poll on the Frat House Eagleville Facebook page asking the specific question. You know, if hockey were to come back, would you prefer it to be a shortened season, say beginning in December, or just scrap the entire season? And my fan base I've got over here overwhelmingly indicated they would prefer to see a shortened season.
Yeah. We got to set up on Ranger Nation. I mean, you know, thousands upon thousands of people, and we really see where people stand.
Yeah. I would love to. And again, you know, this is why, you know, hey, hockey fans, call in. Let us know what your thinking is on it, because – you know, like you and I both said last night on 5 Minutes at Frat House, this is one where you and I are going to agree to disagree. I think both of us agree with each other in principle. We just disagree with the implementation.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But then again, makes for great radio.
Absolutely.
You know? And it is true, people. We are actually disagreeing. So it's not a put-on.
Oh, no.
Not staged.
I don't know how to put on being contrary. I'm just naturally contrary, folks.
What are you talking about, man? Didn't you actually major in acting?
Debate.
Weren't you at the Juilliard School?
Not I. No, no.
All right. Well, listen, we almost spoke for a half an hour there on hockey, so that's
Well, it was. Yeah,
it's starting to get really intense now because, you know what, there are people who just want it back because they missed the game. There are people who just want it to go away because they're just tired of getting stepped on all the time. You know, people's, you know, hard-earned money is going to this league, and that's what's keeping the league around, and they just don't care, you know?
I fully understand both sides, and I feel the same way. You know, just one final point on it. I mean, it was great because I believe it was Sidekick brought up to me last night after the show. He said to me, Mike, didn't you say that after the last lockout, it took you 3 years to come back? And I said, yes, that was true.
Yeah.
Because the entire season was wiped out.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what would it take for you not to come back again for, say, another 3-4 seasons. And I said, if the entire season were wiped out, that's what'll do it. But if we can get hockey going by December, I'm probably going to be around.
We'll see what happens. You know, I don't know. A 40-game season.
It's really, when it comes right down to it, Jonathan, the season's too long as it is. That's just my personal opinion.
Nah. Come on, man. You're talking about that, man? Baseball's 160-something games?
Listen, I'm not saying that that's not too long.
Come on, man. That, you know what? That, you know, baseball season should be 40 games.
Oh, no. Well, no. Well, you know, hold on.
Come on, man. It's boring, Mike. Come on. Listen. You know what? I know you're getting up there, Mike, and I know you're starting to slow down a little because of baseball.
Oh, listen to you. just not right. I get no respect, folks.
What are you, Rodney now?
Yeah, exactly.
I get no respect at all.
I need my tie. Where's my tie?
Hey, did you ever tell people about that girl you really liked from next door that told you to come over and nobody was home? You went over and nobody was home?
Nobody was home, that's right.
All right, well, listen. We spoke a lot about the NHL. Right at the moment, screw the NHL. If you ain't going to have a season or not, or even let us know if the season's going to be scrapped, screw you. Let's talk about the NBA, Mike.
For a minute, yep.
You know, real exciting beginning of the season already. There's some surprises already. I know it's still short. But then again, you know, like we always talk about, there's a lot of different leagues here where, you know, getting a bunch of wins in the beginning of the season really helps you in the middle and at the end of the season.
Yes, it does.
So, you know, let's talk about the Lakers. To me, that's one of the biggest surprises thus far in the NBA. 1-4, they're 2.5 games back of the first place LA Clippers. You know, only 2.5 games separates you. It doesn't mean nothing, but there's so much going on in Los Angeles right now with the Lakers. You know, bringing in Steve Nash, bringing in Dwight Howard, you know, Mike Brown being the coach, Kobe aging. You know, there's a lot riding on the LA Lakers right now. Mike, 1-4 now. We both saw the video where Kobe is staring and seething at head coach Mike Brown. Mm-hmm. You can already see it. Mike Brown's most likely not going to be around for the whole season. Mm-hmm. Unless they somehow turn it around and go on some big winning streaks, which could still happen. You know, when Mike Brown was hired, everybody heard, everybody knew Kobe Bryant, he wanted Brian Shaw to take over for Phil Jackson.
Right.
That was his endorsement. That's who he wanted as the coach. Lakers went another way. Bus, everybody else, they went. They got Mike Brown from Cleveland, who was still the Cavaliers coach at the time, Mike.
Right.
You know, now 1-4, you could see, you know, Nash was already injured. You know, even before that, you could see he's having trouble in Mike Brown's offense. Let's talk about this. Already, you could see Bryant doesn't want Mike Brown coaching this team. He didn't want it from the beginning. What's it going to take for the Lakers to can Mike Brown and make, let's say, Brian Shaw the head coach of the Lakers? How many losses is it going to take? What number game of the season do you think everything's going to implode for the Lakers?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we were talking about this a little bit pre-show. And, you know, on Monday when we started talking, I guess it was Monday when we were talking a little bit of about the NBA, and I made the point to you there. Come on, you know, it's way too early. The season's too young. Don't sweat anything. And yet we're looking at the Lakers, as you point out, who are 1-4, lost again most recently. I guess it was on Wednesday night. And I made the comment to you this morning, well, listen, you got to know that this thing isn't going to hang around this long. It's they're not going to deal with this for too long. A 1-4. Now, in my mind, if they're not at 500 by the time they get to 10 games, I think they're in serious trouble. I think something's going to happen.
Yeah.
If they're not at 500. If they're not 5-5 by the time they get to 10 games, I think you're going to have a lot of people sounding the alarm.
Okay. Now, you know, I said it from the beginning. I think the Clippers are the better team only because, you know, we all saw the whole Lakers thing when they brought in Gary Payton, they brought in Karl Malone, they put them next to Shaq, they put them next to Bryant. And I hate to say this, but those four are better than what the four have right now. You know, I'd rather have Nash over Gary Payton, but, you know, Karl Malone was an all-around player. Shaquille O'Neal was an all-around player. At that time, Kobe Bryant in his prime. Now you add an aging Steve Nash to an aging Kobe Bryant, to an aging Paul Gasol, to a Ron Artest who nobody really cares about.
Right.
And did you bring in a younger Dwight Howard?
Right.
We have Dwight Howard taking touches away from Bryant. Bryant taking touches away from Dwight Howard. You know, Pau Gasol's an offensive player. He's not going to get the ball. You know, Ron Artest, he's going to chuck up some threes that you know they're not going to want him to take.
Right.
So, you know, from the beginning, I already said I don't think the Lakers are going to do much this year. I don't see them make, you know, even if they made it to the playoffs, I don't see them competing in the playoffs. I never once thought about Mike Brown being the problem.
Well, I frankly didn't either. However, you know, you bring up the videotape that's been spread around, and it's, you know, from the sideline, and you know it's Kobe Bryant, and he is just staring down Mike Brown.
Yeah.
Of which, you know, then later on, then Bryant is asked about it, you know, and Bryant kind of, you know, of course he's going to kind of dismiss it and laugh at it and said, well, you know, hey, the media, all of you guys are just bored. You know, in other words, we're trying to find a story. But I think that it is, I think that the video, as short as it is, speaks volumes to potentially what might be going on inside the locker room.
Yeah.
And this might just be a situation, you know, yeah, you bring in somebody like Dwight Howard, and God knows, Jonathan, we have seen this so many times. You know, where you bring in a star player, and I don't care what the team is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if it's football or if it's baseball. You bring in a star player, and suddenly the entire chemistry is changed in the locker room. And, in fact, when I saw the video of Kobe Bryant, that's the first thing that struck out to me was, in fact, wow, this looks like they're already coming apart at the seams. And we're only 5 games into the season.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying I don't think that this thing can go too long.
Yeah.
They're not going to let it go too long. They've put too much of an investment into Dwight Howard.
Too much. Too much investment. And, you know what, did they even sign him? Or is he still, having a chance to be a free agent this offseason? I don't think they signed him, right?
Wasn't it just for the remainder of the contract, correct?
Yeah. So, you know, if they pull it like crap, he's not going to re-sign with L.A. because, you know, no. He wants to be in Brooklyn.
Right.
You know, so they really banked so much on this season.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Let me just take a look here at the standings. They're averaging about 97.2 points per game. They're letting up 98.8 points per game.
Right.
And that's
right.
What Mr. Defense Dwight Howard on a team, which they didn't have last season.
Right.
In total in 5 games, 185 minutes, Kobe has 136 points. Now, if you knew this was last season or the year before in 5 games, Kobe would have been over the 220 mark already. So, already we're talking about it. Dwight Howard taking touches away from Kobe. You know, Pau Gasol, only 68 points in 5 games. He's averaging about 13.6 points per game. So, already in 5 games, you could see how it's affecting the Lakers.
Sure. But,
Steve Nash as well. In 2 games... He has only 4.5 points per game, only 4 assists a game.
Yeah.
You know, that's not Steve Nash.
No, but like you, I didn't think that Steve Nash was necessarily – I mean, you're talking about an aging Steve Nash. I really didn't think he was going to bring – you know, you're not going to be seeing the old Steve Nash. Let's get that one straight.
No, but listen, not in this offense. Not in the Princeton offense. Not with the Lakers with so many hogs around them with the ball. You know, and
right.
Steve Nash – doesn't need to score to be effective because he is just one of the purest point guards I think I've ever seen. You know, let's put that out there first.
Right.
You know, but already, unfortunately, you know, he's injured. I don't know when he's going to be back. I think he has a bruised left shin. You know, coming from where, you know, averaged 10.7 assists last year, 11.4 before, 11.0, you know, before that. You know, average. I mean, it's only been 2 games. I know that, but still, you know, with the core that he has around him, you would think he'd have more than 4.0 assists per game already.
Right.
You know, haven't seen it yet. I mean, it's been only 2 games, but you know, you could take a couple of games. I mean, it's been 5 games. You could look at those 5 games, and it's already speaking volumes.
Oh well, yeah, exactly. And you know, just a personal observation. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I drank the Dwight Howard Kool-Aid. I mean, you know, I thought this guy, you know, hey, the Lakers are going to get him. Well, that's automatically going to fix a lot of the Lakers' problem.
Yeah.
And the only thing that we as fans, that is observers, really fan observers, because I'm not a Lakers fan per se, and I don't get a chance to see too many of their games as you know, as a result of the fact they're West Coast. But as an observer looking in, you got to ask the question, is this an issue being created by Dwight Howard, or is this just Kobe being a prima donna as usual?
Well, that's nothing new. I mean, how
well, that's my point.
Freaking years have we heard that already, you know?
Well, sure.
So,
you know, he wants to stare down the coach. He doesn't like the coach. He doesn't like Dwight Howard. He doesn't like this. He doesn't like that. Hey, why don't we just, you know, why don't we just change the name from the Lakers to being the L.A. Bryants?
Well, we've heard that already as well, too. But seriously, okay, you're not happy with the coaching. You're not happy with Mike Brown. There's no reason to disrespect a guy like that and having the court on camera. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Mike Brown is a very good guy, you know. Unfortunately, he's put up with so much crap from LeBron James, you know, in Cleveland. Now he has to put up with the crap from Kobe Bryant in L.A.
I'd rather take LeBron James than the nonsense from Bryant. Let's get it straight.
Well, honestly, because I don't like either or, yeah. But you don't see LeBron doing that on the court.
No, you don't.
But you have heard about things off the court.
Sure.
You know, Bryant, be a leader. You know, hey, you know what? Let me go speak to the owner. Let me speak to the general manager. Let me speak to the coach. Let's have a meeting. Let's bring in Steve Nash to that meeting. Let's bring in Dwight Howard to that meeting. Let's really focus on, hey, who's going to get the ball? Which role is somebody going to get? And let me tell you, this is why I like Mike Woodson with the Knicks. Mm-hmm. All of the players, they have roles. Mm-hmm. They know what they're there for. Melo, he knows he's there to score. Amare, to score. Tyson Chandler, to play defense, grab rebounds. Raymond Felton, hey, you're there to help get the pick and roll running. You're there for the assist. You're there for the steals and defense. Same thing for Shumpert. Same thing for when they brought in Ronnie Brewer. Everybody has their roles, and you can see how effective it's been so far. The Knicks are the only undefeated team in the NBA. Tonight they play the Mavericks. I expect them to actually win that game because the Mavericks don't have anybody anymore. Let's put it that way. You know, people need to know their roles on the Lakers. You know, why did we bring in Steve Nash? You know, why did we bring in Dwight Howard? Why do we still have Ron Artest? You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, why did we let Lamar Odom go, who's a very good role player, to bring in the crap that we have in now?
Well, it sounds to me like perhaps maybe what you're – and, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds to me like what you're saying is those roles have yet to be defined by Mike Brown.
No, they haven't been defined. And you know what? It's you know, for that, I fault Mike Brown because that's his job.
All right.
You know, you're bringing an agent Antoine Jameson for the bench – 5 games, only 3.8 points a game. You know, these are the guys say, hey, listen, you are going to be my main focus coming off the bench. I need you to score. I need you to play defense. You know, same thing with Jordan Hill, Devin Ebanks, Jody Meeks, Chris Duhon. Hey, you're a backup. You're going to be our third point guard. You may not see a lot of games this year, but Chris Duhon, you've been around for so many years.
Right.
I need you to teach the young guys. That's your role.
Right.
In practice, when they come off the court, if you see them getting heated up, grab them, take them to the side, be a leader, be a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see that. I've watched 3 of the Lakers games so far this season. I've actually, you know, have been lucky to watch a lot of different games so far this NBA season. And, you know, that's what I see. You know, I already see Mike Brown losing control of the team.
Well,
but not because of the fact of his coaching. It's because of Kobe Bryant. You know, you could already see Kobe Bryant in 5 games is so peeved at Mike Brown's offense that you know it's not going to last another 30, 35 games.
And your sentiment is being echoed by ESPN, article this morning, headline Lakers Mike Brown on hot seat. We're talking about a team that's only played 5 games and already they're sounding the alarm. I said to you pre-show, you know, obviously I'm sitting up late last night doing post-production work on 5 Minutes at the Frat House. I've got SportsCenter on. What are they saying there? They're saying the same thing that this article is saying. They've got, right now, the Lakers have got 6 games coming up at the Staples Center at home.
Yeah.
And the feeling is that within those 6 games, they better do something positive. They better do something positive.
Listen.
Now, you know, otherwise, you know, you might be looking at a situation. Now, in some respects, though, Jonathan, you're kind of, you know, you blame Mike Brown, but at the same time, you're blaming Kobe. So I'm not quite sure.
Well, you know what? Like I said, everybody on a team has their roles. Okay? You know what? Using the Knicks as an example again, because I know the Knicks so well, and I like what they're doing at the moment. They bring in Mike Woodson. They let go of Mike D'Antoni. Why? Because Mike D'Antoni was so one-dimensional. High-powered offense. Team couldn't even crack 100 points a game. You bring in Mike Woodson, who is more of a defensive coach but can still run an effective offense like we saw in Atlanta with him. He knows what he's doing. As soon as he brought in these players, he says, this is what your role is. This is how we're going to run it in practice. He brought in Rasheed Wallace. Why? Because I had Rasheed Wallace in Atlanta for 1 year. I know what he can do. He can be a defensive stopper off the bench the last few minutes of each game when they're close and when they're not close, which is so far in three games. What have you seen? Rasheed Wallace in for about the last 5 minutes of each game.
Mm-hmm.
He's sticking to those roles, and so far it's been real effective, and the players are loving it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, for the Lakers, that's Mike Brown's fault on that side of the ball. Whatever is happening on the court from a leadership standpoint, from a mentor standpoint, from a role model standpoint, I blame it all on Kobe.
Yeah.
Because that's his franchise.
Right.
It's not Dwight Howard's. It's not Steve Nash's. It's Kobe Bryant. Same thing like in Miami. It's not LeBron's. It's not Bosch's. It's Dwayne Wade's franchise.
Is this a situation where Buss just kind of knee-jerked it, going out, you know, picking up Dwight Howard, throwing these names together?
He did not do. He saw that Dwight Howard was the biggest fish.
Right.
He caught it right away without doing his homework.
Yeah, we're going to make a splash sort of thing. We're going to get the headlines.
Yeah, listen, which is why I said, hey, Brooklyn, go grab Dwight Howard. With Bull Chuck and Joe Johnson and Deron Williams needing the ball at all times to be effective, what the hell are you going to do with a Dwight Howard?
Well,
you know, for me in the Atlantic, that's only better for the Knicks.
Yeah, but you made a good point. It's very possible. I'm sorry, did you say the Brooklyn to get him?
Yeah, because, you know, that was the rumor that he wanted to go to
Exactly. Nobody
else, and he had no choice but take the trade to go to the Lakers.
But you make a good point. It's very possible that that's in the back of Brooklyn's mind for this coming up, this upcoming offseason.
Well, you know, trust me, the Brooklyn Nets, they're going to be watching the Los Angeles Lakers really carefully.
I mean, that may have been a situation where they just had financial constraints holding them down at that particular moment to go for that one as it was. Well, at that particular moment.
You know, Dwight Howard, he really tried to turn his back on the Orlando franchise.
Yes.
Orlando said, you're out of your mind if you think we're trading you to Brooklyn and giving you what you want.
Yeah.
You know? So,
of course, he was acting like
he already had a trade on the table for Brooke Lopez, a couple other players, and like three or four first-round draft picks for Howard.
Well, I think
they down and sends them to L.A.
It was becoming a circus. Let's get it straight. The fan base was getting perturbed at the whole thing, going, Just make up your damn mind, dude. Where are you going?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? It was a circus. So, all right, Mike. Let's. You know what? We spend a lot of time on that again, but you know, it's always great stuff when you have to. A lot to say about a certain issue.
Absolutely.
So, you know what? Let's. We only have a little over 17 minutes left, so let's dive into our next couple of topics here, and it's baseball. Let's talk about the Texas
really,
Rangers.
Dude, you want to talk baseball? Baseball?
Yeah.
You want to talk baseball?
There's no crying at baseball.
You of all people want to do a little hot stove, huh?
Hey, listen. This is what I like about baseball. I like the off season and I like contracts. Best part about baseball in my eyes.
You should have been an attorney, for God's sake.
Should have.
Or an agent.
Listen. Let's talk about the Texas Rangers. Their franchise player, outfielder Josh Hamilton's a free agent. Rangers made a qualifying offer last week to him for 1 year at slightly lower than what he made this past season, which he made about $13.75 million. Already you could see they're trying to focus on life with Josh Hamilton for the next year or without Josh Hamilton for forever. A report came out today from ESPN that the Rangers offer 3 years max. That's it. For a player who has done phenomenal for the Texas Rangers over the last bunch of seasons, this season alone, .285 batting average, 43 home runs, 128 ribbies in 148 games. Phenomenal stats, Mike.
Yep.
3 years max. If he doesn't take it, and you know he's going to get more from another team, whether it be the New York Yankees, whether it be the Boston Red Sox, whether it be another team, they're going to offer a hell of a lot more than 3 years because, frankly, in baseball, 3 years is nothing right now.
A
player of Josh Hamilton's caliber.
Yes.
Mike, you're looking at this. You read everything that's been said and what's happening. What do you think is going on here in Texas? Do you think John Daniels, the general manager, is being smart about this? Or do you think Josh Hamilton is going somewhere else?
this is a situation where Texas is going through the motions. Let's get it straight. So that when Josh Hamilton ultimately makes the announcement that he's going to, well, let's God forbid hope it's not the New York Yankees. But when he makes the announcement that he's going somewhere else, the Texas Rangers are going to be able to say to their fan base, oh, but we tried. We tried. Look, we made an offer. 3 years at what they are offering is a joke.
It is.
You and I both concur on that one. You know, just a bit more than $1 million over what he was making last year. Uh-uh. This guy, we already know it. He can make more than that out there on the free market, and that's what he's planning on doing. Texas Rangers know that, and what they're trying to do is they're just trying to cover their tail when their fan base is screaming at them. That's what it's all about. You know, look, I understand that Josh Hamilton has been a bit of a head case, but nonetheless, everybody recognizes what kind of a talent this guy is. There's no doubt about it. I would love to have him on my fills.
Absolutely. I hear you. Okay, now let's switch it over to another free agent now.
Sure.
38-year-old knuckle bowler, R.A. Dickey from the New York Mets. You know, from what we're hearing, Dickey wants 5 years.
Yeah.
Now, we all know an aging knuckle bowler is not like a – You know, they don't age like, you know, other pitchers do.
Uh-huh.
You know, Tim Wakefield, you know, of recent is one example, played into his 40s with no problem. Although, for the Mets, a team that's already having problems with their roster and in the standings the last few seasons, let me ask you this, Mike. He went 20-6 this year with a 2.73 ERA in 2012. He's having better and better seasons as he's getting older.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the New York Mets. A 5-year deal for a 38-year-old pitcher when they're already having problems and they still have not yet signed their franchise player, David Wright, to a long-term deal, do you think this is smart for the Mets to do? Does R.A. Dickey deserve a 5-year deal from the New York Mets? Or do you think it's smarter for the New York Mets and Sandy Alderson to trade R.A. Dickey and get something much younger and something better into the team for the future?
You bring up a great conundrum for the Mets, all right? And I'll itemize it this way. You know, you and I both know, and you're more of a Mets follower than I am, although I do follow them because they're in my division.
Yeah.
This is a team that has to make some changes. We all know that. They have to.
Yes.
But the question I have is R.A. Dickey one of those that you need to make the change on? Yes, I understand he's a 38-year-old pitcher. I think for any other type of pitcher, I probably would say no. Don't do it. Do not sign a 5-year contract.
Yeah.
However, how can you deny it when he just had the kind of season that he did?
Yeah.
I say that what you try to do is you try to build your starting rotation around R.A. Dickey going forward.
Yeah.
Look at some of the other pieces that you have in order to try to rebuild that team.
Yes.
I wouldn't be using Dickey as one of them.
Which
I say sign it.
Yeah, which, let me throw this out, the starting pitching, whether it's on the team right now or even in the minor leagues, that's probably the lone strength for the New York Mets. You know, Dickey, Dillon Gee, Jonathan Neese. You still have Yoan Santana, who knows if he's going to pitch next year or even be effective, but you have so many prospects coming up now. You know, the guy that they got from, you know, from San Francisco, Zach Wheeler,
mm-hmm.
that they brought in, you know, Kevin Harvey. So, I mean, they really expect the starting rotation in the future to be really good.
Right.
But now let's look at what's on the field. They already did something that I thought they wouldn't do. They got rid of Jason Bay.
Right.
He bought out his contract.
Right.
You know, so it's, you know, in my opinion, 5 years for a 38-year-old pitcher, no matter, you know, even if he had a phenomenal season, he's most likely going to win the, win the Cy Young now. I think they could get a lot for him.
Well, let me back up the bus a moment. Let's go back to the Bay situation. What was, you know, and again, and I'm gonna defer to you because you're a Mets follower. What was the motivation there? It wasn't a financial aspect.
No. Listen, they knew Bay is not the player he once was. He's not doing anything now in New York. He's been miserable since they signed him. You know, he signed a 4-year, $66 million contract in 2010, and in his 3 years, he's only hit 26 home runs.
Okay, so.
So to have that much money riding on a player, I think they wanted to get rid of him to open up a bench spot. And
I
they
agree.
Also wanted to get rid of him to have a younger player, whether it be a Kirk Nieuwenhuis or you know, somebody else taking over a spot in the outfield.
Okay, and that was exactly my thinking as well when I heard it and I read it the other day. And so I just needed to, I just wanted to have you confirm that. I concur with you. That's exactly what the motivation was. So it's obvious that this Mets team is seriously, seriously looking at the long term.
Yes.
And is serious about attempting to rebuild this team, even if it comes at a financial cost.
Yeah. Which, you know, Sandy Alderson's going to do because that's what he's known for doing.
Right.
Well, we actually have a call, Mike.
Oh, good.
Good job. So let's welcome in somebody here from the 646 area code. What's going on?
What's up, guys? It's Joey.
Oh, Big Joe!
Joe, how we doing, man?
I'm all right. Just coming back from school, so, you know. I missed the first portion of your show. I know you guys are talking hockey, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to it. Hopefully, it'll come to a solution here, like in the next 48 hours or whatever, and play at least a 70-game schedule. So that would be pretty awesome. But since you guys are talking baseball and the Mets and Dickey, here's my take. Dickey's not your ordinary knuckleballer. Okay, he's not Tim Wakefield, Phil Negro, any of those guys who – throw the ball consistently, 40s, 50 mile per hour range, whatever.
Yes.
He throws a harder knuckleball. So
right.
When he gets to the later stages of the game, he starts to fatigue.
Yeah.
Okay, so innings do play a part in terms of dealing with R.A. Dickey. So I don't view him the way Tim Wakefield should be viewed, where he can pitch well into his mid to late 40s. I don't think R.A. Dickey is going to last that long, okay? So I think that the Mets, in their best interest, if they're planning on keeping him, the best deal for them is a 3-year deal. If R.A. Dickey is committed to getting 5 years, then I believe Alderson, and as much as I love R.A. Dickey and I want him to stay with the Mets, but it would be in the best interest of the Mets, R.A. Dickey, and everybody in general, if they just trade him, try to get a Justin Upton or somebody, I don't know, but just get a proven outfield bat that's pretty young and athletic, because obviously, as Jonathan knows, the Mets are paper thin in the outfield right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, they have, like, absolutely nothing over there. Although I still have hope for Nieuwenhuis, if he can cut down on his strikeouts. I think you have a gritty player there, so I like him.
Well, you know what? I like his defense. I think he'd be a really good center fielder for the Mets moving forward.
Exactly. So... and another player that I think the Mets should look at that I believe is a free agent that I think – because you got to remember, the Mets are going to try to play into the whole money ball thing where they're going to look for bargain players that get a high on-base percentage the whole nine yards. So a player that I like that showed me a lot in the postseason, Nate McLeod. To make him a Met, I have no problem bringing him here.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all going to fall on what, you know, Sandy Alderson has to you know, spending what's going to go on. Joey, thanks for calling. We actually have another caller, and so we're going to get to that because we only have a few more minutes.
Right.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Joe.
It's all going to come down to Sandy Alderson. So let's get to our other caller since we only have a few more minutes. 717 area code. What's going on?
Hey, this is Mike in Pittsburgh. How you doing?
Hey, you doing, Mike?
Pretty good. Hey, I'm a sports handicapper, and I'd like to give you a pick and then get your opinion and talk about this game here on Sunday, if you don't mind.
Shoot.
Okay. Denver is visiting Carolina, and Denver is a 4-point favorite. I think we've reached the point now where Denver is being overvalued. They're kind of a public darling, a media darling team, and to be a 4-point road favorite in this position – I like Carolina here, guys. Carolina, obviously, they don't have a great record, but if you look at their season, they've lost a lot of close games against some good teams. And I just feel from a handicapping spot, Denver is starting to get a little too much credit, all this love for Peyton Manning. I mean, I'm in the theory that wait till the bad weather starts in Denver, and we'll see the Peyton Manning of old 8-9 record in the playoffs all the time. So, like your opinion on my comments, guys, and then a pick, Denver -4 at Carolina.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, and it's very possible that, in fact, Denver is, getting the benefit of the doubt based on, a lot of other public relations issues. I, for one, picked Denver on it. You can't deny what we've seen from Peyton Manning. And I hear what you're saying, that, let's wait and see what happens with the weather. I already made the pick on this one back on Wednesday show, and I had picked Denver to go with it.
Yeah. Denver straight up or with the points? You picked Denver to win by more than four?
Yes, I would actually take Denver to win by more than four.
Yeah, man, I'm actually going to go with Denver, too, and actually covering the point. It's still Carolina. You know what? We can wait until the weather gets worse and see what happens with Peyton Manning, but weather's probably going to be damn good this weekend in Carolina. So, I would definitely pick Denver, and I would say that the Denver Broncos are going to actually cover the spread.
Here's the thing, guys, I was looking at. The last two games for Carolina, at Chicago, they lose by a point in a game they probably should have won.
Right. Yeah.
Last week, they on the road again, they beat a Redskin team.
Yep.
Now, Carolina, like I said, all these losses, this year have been close, and I think they've finally turned that point, where they kind of hit rock bottom with Cam Newton and all the negativity, where
yep.
they're going to go up. So I just see in this spot, Denver might win, but I just think 4 points is an awful lot as a road favorite for Denver, especially in this spot, winning a game on the road last week. In the NFL, winning all these games on the road when you're a favorite, no matter how good you are, doesn't add up, in handicapping terms.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, sky's the limit, as you said. They can only go up. But, then again, what kind of Peyton Manning are we going to see this weekend? And also, are we going to get the inconsistent Cam Newton that's been going on so far in most of these losses? And, if Cam Newton can turn it around and look like he did last season, Carolina's only going to go up, just like you said.
Well, and great point, Jonathan. And I think, let's get it straight. Handicapping is handicapping. They're not necessarily looking at numbers and stats and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're going by feel. And the feel right now has been that Cam Newton is in a sophomore slump. That's been the feel. So, I would ask our friend from Pittsburgh to, give us a ring back on Monday and let's see where the game comes down. Because, frankly, I'm going to stick by it. I'm going to say Denver does cover the spread on it. That's not to say they're going to do it consistently for the remainder of the season. But on this one, I would say take Denver.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. You know what? Give us a call back on Monday, man, if you can. The show will be on from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern time. And let's talk about that Denver game and see if they actually covered the points.
Sure. Great stuff, guys. You have a good weekend.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in, buddy.
You bet.
Great stuff, man.
Yep.
It's always good to have something different coming on. And hopefully Mike will call in Monday and we'll talk about that Denver-Carolina game and see if we're all right.
Well, and I hope we don't have egg on our face at that point. But that's okay. Even if we do, it's all right.
Man? Handicappers are wrong. We've always been wrong. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, it could be a blowout win from the Panthers. I mean, things happen. That's the great thing about sports.
Any given Sunday.
So, Mike, we only have a little over 2 minutes left. Let's do some plugs here. Beat the Shark, Week 10. It's online. Once again, we apologize for not having Week 9, but due to Hurricane Sandy, we had to, basically postpone it. So it is online. Head over to fanjunkies.net, and you can take a look at it and see 8 beauties from the Lingerie Football League taking on the Shark, Jeff Perini.
Yeah.
Also,
let me do this one, too. I want to throw in real quick. Jeff's been writing some great stuff over on his website.
Absolutely.
With regard to fantasy football and what have you. And I've been reposting his articles up on the Frat House Eagleville. What he's doing over there at Camel Clutch blog is great stuff. If you're into fantasy football, you want to be checking out his weekly.
Absolutely. And you know what? Even check out CamelClutchBlog.com. Friends of ours over there, Eric Garjula, who runs the site, great guy. So check that out. Also, FratHouseSports.net. You can check out the newest edition of 5 Minutes at the Frat House on there later on today. And then also, our girl of the day today, Stephanie Manu from LFL Canada. Check around on fanjunkies.net. And also Monday at 12 o'clock, we're going to be joined by former Fan Junkies Girl of the Day and Playboy Barmaid of April 2012, Alana Ballantyne, is going to be with us to talk about the Girl of the Day in November.
Yep.
And we'll have a little fun with her on Monday. So
sounds like we got a full possible full
week
coming up.
We have lots of guests coming on, so it's going to be good. So if you're listening in now, make sure you stay tuned because it's going to be great.
Yep.
Thanks for listening in. Thanks for our callers today. Big Joe out in the Bronx. Mike out in Pittsburgh. We hope you call in Monday. We'll talk to you then. So for myself and Mike McShane, we'll see you all Monday.
Have a great weekend.